Jonathan Leask is local democracy reporter based at the Ashburton Guardian in Mid-Canterbury. Hi, Jonathan.
Kia ora, how's things?
Good, thanks. So everyone's trying to sort their numbers out. Where have things landed with Ashburton's long-term plan?
Well, they signed the draft long-term plan off on Wednesday, and they're sitting at 9.9% average rates rise for year one, with a 6.8% average over the 10 years, which if you look at the LGNZ report that came out last week, showing an average of about 15%, that's not too bad for 9.9% in year one.
All right. It's still up there, isn't it? But it's not where some are. And
it's still up there.
Yeah, go ahead. How have they got to that number? Was there anything significant that had to go in order to make it possible?
It's a pretty basic budget, to be fair. It's focusing on those core infrastructure services that you'd expect the council to do, the roads and the waters. 4.2% of the rise is due to roading. They're doing a 24% increase in their road spend, so spending about $32 million over the 3 years. And while that sounds like great news, that's just catching up to basically what it costs now to do the same thing they were doing for the last 3 years. So while they're spending more, you'd be getting more. And that sort of points to the thing that Ashburton Mayor Neil Brown's pointed to, the three I's of inflation, insurance and interest having a bit of an effect on that 9.9% as well. Three waters is a big spend-up area as well. They've got a lot of the compliance work for Taumata Arawai to do, starting with UV protection across some of the water schemes. And I'm pretty sure it's $10 million getting spent on that next year. So that's a pretty big investment to tick a box there in the water compliance realm. But they've got $61.5 million on water and wastewater renewals over the next 10-year period. So they're not shying away from doing their three waters work.
And they haven't previously, as we discussed last time we were talking, these Canterbury councils, many of them are in a better position than other places in the country that have barely touched the pipes, it seems, for 100 years.
Yeah, they've been doing the work. Some of the pipes they're digging up are 60 to 80 years old, so they're sort of past their used-by date, but they're still holding firm. But they are progressively working their way through the system, and they're not too far away from actually completing the whole renewal program. But obviously once you get to the end, you start back at the start again, and there's new subdivisions going up, so there's new work going on, so it's a never-ending beast as the three waters realm.
What are the big talking points that have come out of the plan when it comes to specific projects, Jonathan?
They've got they're calling it their five for our future is their focus in the long-term plan. So they've got their five big issues, one being adding the green waste bins, which all councils sort of have to add. The household food waste has to be dealt with by 2027, I think it is. The council's proposing to go the extra step and do the full green bin, so you put your lawn clippings in there with your food waste. The other one is the council's looking at getting out of the stock water game, so not closing off stock water, they're just not going to be delivering it anymore. So they're having a conversation about how that's going to work if they stop delivering stock water in 3 years, how people are going to get that. Then there is a proposed stadium extension in about years five, I think it's 6 through 7 and 8, adding three more courts to the EO Network Stadium. And part of the long-term plan consultation, there's also a new blueprint for the future, a 30-year blueprint for the development of that stadium, which includes all manner of things, including an outdoor pool, which is one of the other five talking points. They've got $3 million to spend on pools. The preferred option is a new outdoor pool at the EA Network Stadium, but that's got the Tynwald community up in arms because they want the retention of the infamous leaky Tynwald pool that we've discussed before. So there's going to be a bit of a heated discussion on that one, I feel. And then the fifth one is the future of the Balmoral Hall and the adjacent old Polytech land that the council's proposing to sell.
Why has Ashburton Council been accused of some creative accounting?
Well, that comes to, around the Balmoral Hall proposal to sell it. The Heritage Mid-Canterbury, they're questioning the figure. And Nigel Gilkerson, one of their members, he claimed that the council was using some creative accounting to sort of sway the public towards their preferred option of selling it. Suggesting that the estimated $1.3 million repair bill is just pulled out of thin air type thing. and because it was scheduled to be a $480,000 do up 2 years ago, and they went to do it and got all the figures and quotes back, and it actually came in at $1.3 million. Because to do that building up at the moment, it's got it's all a bit old school. It was built in the 1930s. It's still got those old heaters where you have to put the token in to turn the heaters on. So it's an old hall. And to fix it up, they've got to do all the modern building standards of it'll have to have fire suppressant sprinklers added, new toilets, mobility access, an update to the kitchen, insulation, all those bits and pieces to get it up to code. And that's why it ballooned from $480,000 to $1.3 million. But the Heritage Mid-Canterbury guys are still a bit sceptical of that figure, and they just have a feeling that it's just another heritage building in town that's been left to fall into disrepair, and the council's trying to wash their hands of it.
Okay, and their kind of comeback is what? How have they explained it all?
Well, the council have basically said that the hall isn't as well used as people think. There's a dance school, and they've operated out of there for, I think it's 40-odd years. They run classes 6 days a week. They've got about 200 students, so they're the main user. And the fees for the hall is $25 per hour. The hall made a massive amount of income last year of $11,400. But to run the building cost the council $44,000. So there's a $30,000 ratepayer top up there to keep that hall functioning every year. And then you chuck on top of that a $1.3 million repair bill. The economics are telling them that that building isn't one worth saving, their position. But the land next door to it, the old Polytech land, which is what that hall originally was part of, so the old Polytech that was there, is probably one of the busiest car parks in Ashburton. It's a bit of an informal car park, it's just a gravel area and people just park there. Funnily enough, the council moving their new civic centre and library over to that side of town, that is where a lot of the council staff park, as they are quite welcome to, being public land and they're public employees. So there's a train of thought that that might actually be the bit that gets saved to be used as a car park in future.
And that will probably help the value of the land as well, one imagines.
Yes.
Indeed. Okay, let's have a look. So still got submissions. So the submissions are all done, aren't they? So they're just heading for a final vote at some point, are they?
No, the consultation, they've only just signed the annual plan off with all those big five things. They've got a month-long consultation period. They've actually been quite proactive this year. They're having 25 public engagement events, so they are going out to the public asking them what they think, and they are trying hard to get that feedback.
Just finally, the official opening of the Heritage Park and its paid tribute to early Chinese market gardeners.
Yeah, more than 200 descendants of the original families that started the Chinese market garden in Ashburton were there on opening day in February. It was actually quite an interesting opening. They had the Chinese dancers doing the dragons and the lions and all sorts of entertaining performances, but also covered a bit of the history of that site, which operated from 1921 to 1964. It's a 2.3-hectare site. It was home to the largest Chinese community in the South Island at its peak, and they just ran the market garden on what used to be the edge of Ashburton. So they were servicing the town with fruit and veg. They opened up shops in town eventually, and they actually used to run a horse and cart service around the district to the point where they had the respect and trust of their clients to actually go into people's homes, go through the pantry, work out what they need, put what they needed in there, and then leave them the invoice on the bench to collect the money the next time they came round. So they were quite the business, the Ng King brothers. And then obviously that site closed down in 1964 and the building started to fall into disrepair. One of the descendants, Yip Ning, he started a process in 2008, talking to the council about restoring the site and what can and can't be done and that sort of thing. And 16 years later, they had the opening, but unfortunately, Yip passed away 10 months before the opening, so he didn't get to see it come to its full fruition. But his dedication to the project, and basically he was helped track down the 200-odd descendants to get them all to sign off for it to become a heritage park. So it's now a public reserve.
It's an amazing story, isn't it, really? I'm just thinking the brothers were doing what AI will be doing for us soon, which is having a nosy in our fridge and ordering what we need. But remarkable level of trust, isn't it? And a fantastic business service when you just go in and say, yep, you need this, this, and this, pay me next time.
Yeah, and they were leaving under the cover of darkness in the morning on a horse and cart and traipsing all around the district and returning at night and doing the same thing the next day. So they were quite the entrepreneurial guys back in the day.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Leask is our correspondent. He is based with the Ashburton Guardian. He's a local democracy reporter there in mid-Canterbury.